Turn with me to the second chapter of Nehemiah, beginning with verse 17, where we left off last time. Now, Nehemiah had returned about 444 or 5. His mission was to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, which were in a state of ruble as a result of the destruction by Nebuchadnezzar over 100 years prior to this time. So he's back here to build the walls. Now, lesson last Sunday morning, he had just been back a few days, about 3, and he, at night, nobody knew it except a few that were with him, and made a circle of the walls to determine the condition of them. Well, when he got back in verse 16 there, he hadn't told anybody what he was doing, or what his mission was, or what the king, Ahasuerus, Artaxerxes had instructed him to do. Now, beginning with verse 17, he tells the people, "Then said I unto them, ye see this evil case that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach." So here's his call now, to let's get busy, let's build it up. Now look at the response. The response was immediate. "And I told them of the land, of the hand rather, of my God, which was good upon me, as also of the king's words that he had spoken unto me, and they said, let us rise up and build." Now, one thing you'll notice as you study this book of Nehemiah, that Nehemiah has a deep and abiding faith in God. He repeatedly prays unto God, carries his problems to him time after time. And he has a faith to say, we can build the wall. Let's do it. This is all right. Let's get busy. So the people now are ready to get on the walls. So they strengthen their hand for the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant and the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said. Now look back at chapter 1 and chapter 2, I believe it's verse 10, where we're introduced to them. And then Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it. It grieved them exceedingly. Now they began to be grieved that the Jews are coming back to their land and rebuilding it. They all hated the Jews. And so now then, they're grieved, but now then they get a little more hostile in this particular passage here, when it says here that they were angry. They wanted to, they despised us. They sneered at them, what I'm trying to say. They sneered at them, despised them, they held them in contempt. Yet at the same time, they evidently feared them. But they hated them, they hated to see them come back. Despised us and said, what is this thing that you do? Will you rebel against the king? And that's asking the Jews, that's what they're asking the Jews now. Then answered I them and said unto them, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we his servants will arise and build. But you have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. Now there are some who criticize Nehemiah later on when they offered to let's meet in the valley of Ono and work out a compromise. And he refused to do it, said, no, you have no part in it. They failed to recognize the fact that these men were bitter enemies of the Jews. All they wanted to do was to destroy them. They didn't want to join in. Now, I'm sure if they'd have come to Nehemiah and said, we want to worship God with you, we recognize his greatness, we're ready to reject our idol gods, let's build with you and build together, I think it'd been an entirely different situation. But what they wanted was to see the Jews destroyed, and Nehemiah knew that. They were not sincere in wanting to build with them a little bit later. So here, first of all, they began to be grieved at the thought that they're coming back. That is, disappointed, didn't like it. Now then they sneer at them, hold them in utter contempt, And so Nehemiah said, you've got no part in this, but we're going to build it for our God. Now, I like that statement that we're servants of God here, and we're going to build it. God, our God in heaven, and he will prosper us. So he had a deep faith in God. I noticed a little bit later, and he already prayed before he was praying when they came and told him the condition over in Babylon, wherever he was back there, Shushan the palace. Now, beginning with verse 3, I'm going to pass over that chapter. That's a chapter of the names of individuals who contributed to the building of the walls, of the gates at least. They're mostly the gates. Now, I'm coming back to this chapter in a few moments, and notice where they were from. So let's just pass over it for this a moment, because it's just a lot of names there, and we're not interested in that. But do notice verse 5. And next unto them, the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord. So the nobles from Tekoa, that was about 20 miles south and a little east of Jerusalem, but the people had come up from there to help them build. But the nobles did not join them in that. Now that's the nobles of Tekoa. Others from other areas did. But we'll come back to that in a moment. I want to know the places represented. Coming over to the fourth chapter now. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was wroth. He was now extremely upset over it and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. Now, first they laughed at them, then they sneered at them, now then they are mocking them. And he said before his brethren and the army of Samaria. And he was from Samaria. Now, before I move further, let's notice now some of these four countries here, four peoples that are round about them here. All right? And here's Jerusalem about here. All right, now, I'm going to notice several of these places in just a moment, but notice where these are from. Now, first of all, here is Samaria to the north. Samaria over here, and Sanballat is from Samaria, about 135 miles to the northwest, northeast there. Right. Now, let's notice the response here. Now, he says to the army of Samaria here, and said, what are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish, seeing they are burned? In other words, he sneers at them in contempt, and yet you can tell that he fears them, fears what they're going to do. Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, even that which they are building, if a fox go up, he will break down their stone wall. If they're going to be that weak, what do they have to fear? All of this is simply showing their fear of the Jews and their contempt for them and their God. They don't want to see them rebuilding. But I can imagine old Tobiah got a big laugh out of it. Why, if a fox were to run over the wall, they'd fall down. Probably all laugh, but it wasn't a sincere laugh. They knew better. They knew that God was back of it. They were going to have something happen. Now Nehemiah says, now here's his prayer in response to what their contempt and their sneer and all of that here, reviling them. Why, in response to that, he prays. Now, hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn back their reproach upon their own head, and give them up for a spoil in a land of captivity, and cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee. For they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So Nehemiah is thinking about the honor of God in this. So he called upon God. Now this is an imprecatory prayer. You have a number of these prayers in the Psalms. Sometimes people make light of that, or rather disapprove of it. They say that they don't believe that those men are inspired to pray like it. Now let's remember now that we are dealing with a situation here before the Lord came, before that time when he came and gave us a new system. And actually these prayers for the destruction of their enemies is always for the honor and the glory of God, because the enemies are enemies of God. Not only the people, but also of God. And you're living in a different age. We're living in a different period of history, and God is taking people from back out in one age, developing up to a point here and to a point here, always building here to the coming of the Christ, when he will give us the ideal situation. And in that, we're to pray for our enemies, and it's a different situation. Now, notice what he continues here. So we built the wall, and all that the wall was joined together unto half the height thereof. For the people had a mind to work. I want you to note that combination. Here up here in verse 3, he prayed, no, verse 4 and 5, he prays unto God there. Then in verse 6, here the people now work. When you have the combination of prayer and work, you get the job done. Prayer alone won't do it. And work alone without God will not accomplish the right end. But when you put prayer and work together, why then you get the job done. No use for us to pray to God to do that which God expects us to do. Now, God can protect the people while they're working. God can overrule those enemies. But the walls have got to be built by the people. And the same thing is true of the walls of Zion today, or the spiritual temple of today. We can pray to God to do his part, but if the job's ever done, we've got to do our part. The people had a mind to work. I'm sure a lot of sermons have been preached on that text. I don't remember ever preaching one on, probably did in my younger days, but it would make a good one. Here, prayer combined with work. James says, show me your faith apart from your works. I, by my works, will show you my faith. So it takes the two there, faith plus works. Remember Brother Hardiman, one of his sermons back in the 30s, 20s, sometime in the 20s, I had his book. He said that faith, or salvation by faith, is like a boat in which you have two oars, one's faith and one's work. If you're going to get to shore, you've got to use both of them. If you use one of them, well, you're just going in a circle. If you're just praying, you're in a circle. If you're just working, you're in a circle. But when you put prayer and works together, well, the old boat's going to get into the harbor after a while. So I think a good illustration. Our life is like that. Well, it moves on from that. They had a mind to work. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem went forward, and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth. Now they're very upset over this, and they conspired all of them together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to cause confusion therein. But I know that here we pray some more. But we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them them day and night because of them. My eyes not working very well. Now let me notice here. Now here's Sanballat to the north. He's to the north now. Here are the Arabians out here, and the Ammonites rather, out here to the east. Here are the Arabians down here to the south. And here are the Sidonians, I mean, not the Sidonians, but that other group there, not the Ammonites, Sanballat, Tobiah, and the Ammonites, and the Ashdodites. Here are the Ammonites over here, and here are the Ashdodites over here. Now you can see they're surrounded. Here to the north, you've got Sanballat, and over here you've got the Ammonites, and down here you've got the Arabians, and over here you've got the people of Ashdod over here. So they're practically surrounded. Now, that alarms the people in these villages round about. We're going to see in just a moment. So what he did now, he learned that. So here in Jerusalem, he set a guard day and night. Now then, when Sanballat heard that, and Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there's much rubbish. In other words, we're hindered in our work by the rubble from the destroyed city there, so that we are not able to build the wall. And our adversaries said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come into the midst of them and slay them and cause the work to cease. Right? So they plan now to come in and destroy the city, when they're not expecting it. But that was that learning. Now I want to note this verse. Now this is a verse here that, and it came to pass that when the Jews that dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, that means over and over, from all places, you must return unto us. Now, who are these Jews? Now, that's why I want to go back to the 3rd chapter and notice now these that are helping in this work here. All right, the first of all, you have in the first part of it, those of Jerusalem, the priests. Now, come on down here, in verse 7. Next on them repaired Melatah, the Gibeonite. All right, now we want to notice where these villages are around about, and you'll understand what he's talking about. Now, here were Gibeon, something like 5 or 6 miles to the north. Here the Gibeonites here. Moving on from the Gibeonites, the next ones here are more Gibeonites up there in that verse 8, 7, dropping on down to this district of Jerusalem in verse 9. Right now here then were those in, here's Gibeon up here. Here those in Jerusalem here where, of course, the work was going on. And now the next one down here's about verse 13. The valley gate repaired this fellow Hanan and the inhabitants of Zanoah it is. Now that's southeast of Jerusalem. So here then is Zanoah down here. All right, now these people you see, well, they're the ones that are afraid. Now all of that people, there are people from each one of these villages who came over here to Jerusalem to help. Now then some of them came from there and said, come on back home. We need you. We've heard about what these folks are going to do, so come on back home. We need you there. We'll move on down to another one down on there. Down here, the next is Beth Hakaram. Now, that was somewhere in Judah. I don't know where it was. I'm able to locate it. It was somewhere in Judah here, so that would be out of the city limit somewhere there. In Beth Hakaram, that was in Judah. And next here is Mizpah. Now, that was near Gibeon. Mizpah or Gibeon, or Mizpah was somewhere over here, about here to this country. There's Mizpah. So what I'm trying to show here, and then there was Tekoa, come on down a little further, and down here that was Mizpah, come on down to Beth Zur. Now that was somewhere near Judah, I think it was northeast probably here, about up in here somewhere. But anyway, then Tekoa is down here. Here's Tekoa down here. This here. So what I'm showing you is, if in this verse, I didn't get what that meant at first. I'd forgotten it because that's as long as I taught this book. And it came to pass that when the Jews that dwelt by them, by these people, they said, now these people here are the ones that are afraid. They come to Jerusalem now, they tell the brethren who have come in to help them build the wall, come on back home, we need you. Because they realize that here, all of these, they're surrounded here by these people here. If they come in, they're going to get them first. But now notice, I want you to note Zerubbabel's, Nehemiah's response to that. And that was verse about 12 there. Must return. Therefore set I in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in the open places. I set there the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. Now Nehemiah makes provision to protect the people. He finds a place there where they'd be most protected in the city. He wants them all to dwell in that particular place. And then to have their swords and their spears and javelins by their side ready at any time. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. All right, now put your faith in God and fight. So I wouldn't advise a person to do that physically, but when it comes to our spiritual warfare, let's put our faith in God, fight the good fight of the faith. I also believe that while I'm praying for protection, I ought to keep my doors locked. I must do my part in that. If you feel like you can defend with your gun, well, keep your powder dry and keep the thing loaded close at hand there. And my point is, when an individual is threatened, puts his faith in God, He must put his faith in God, but he must do his part. That's what I'm saying. I don't think, and if I just say, Lord, take care of me, and I leave all the doors open at night, knowing the condition, situation, I think that I'm just not doing my part in that. But if you feel like you ought to have your shotgun loaded by with buckshot, why, keep the thing loaded instead of up in the closet somewhere. In other words, you do your part, whatever you believe God would have you do. What is your part? When God says, whoso provided not for his own, spared his own household, denied the faith, I can't help but believe that God expects a man to protect his home under any circumstances. And therefore, have his shotgun or his pistol or his 30-30, whatever he depends on, have it handy there. I think he's to do his part. That's what I'm trying to say. Now, others don't agree with that. And I don't know how, the extent to which I agree with it. But on the other hand, I think that I must do my part in providing for my home, my family. Now, and that, I think, includes more than something to eat and a place to sleep. I think it involves protecting them. So you may take that and study on it. That's up to you to make up your mind on that. Others have we have different views on those matters. All right, but at any rate, here he says now, every one of you at hand, and be ready here. Have your bows ready and your coats of mail and all of that, and be ready there to fight for your family, your daughter, your wife, your home. Now verse 15. And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his work. Now that for a while they had stopped. They had gotten, made their bulwark, fixed themselves in this central place here, and were ready for the attack. Well, when the enemy heard that they were ready for their attack, they backed off and didn't make it. They must have had a dread and a fear of the God of the Jews. For what God had done for the Jews was known throughout the nations at that time there. And they all feared him, they hated him, and hated the Jews. And if the Jews had been faithful to God, they'd have never been destroyed. The city would never have been taken. But they are somehow or other, they just couldn't be what they ought to be. Never could. All right, now verse 16. And it came to pass from that time forth that half of my servants wrought in the work, and half of them held the spears, the shields, and the bows, and the coats of mail, and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. Now the rulers were backing. Now when my servants, these are the ones that came with Nehemiah. Remember back in the first chapter we pointed out that Nehemiah came and he had a detachment of soldiers with him and his servants with him. So he now fixes his part of his servant's work, the other half are constantly on guard there. So he's using his people that he brought with him from Shushan the palace as well as the rest of them. That all this to me is very interesting in noting the wisdom and the unselfishness and the liberality of this man, and also his deep faith in God, but his recognition that he must do his part. People got to do their part. Well, that's a good lesson. That's a lesson we need to learn. It's just as true today as it was back then. It's just principle is still the same there. All right, but now here's, look now at verse 17. They that builded the wall and they that bear burdens laded themselves, everyone with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other held his weapon. Now some of them spent all of that time protecting, others were ready. They were working in one hand and holding their weapon in the other hand. But then there's another group. And the builders, everyone had his sword girded by his side, and so built it. Now there were others who had to lift these stones and had both hands, they had the sword by the side. Now those that could put stuff into a basket here, carry it, or they could shovel it up and put it in the basket and carry it with a javelin or a spear in their hand here. Then the others here were doing heavier work. They had their sword ready, but they had to use both hands. Well, what's the point? The point is every man was doing that which he could. He was doing his work and protecting them as best he could at the same time. They were ready to fight and they were ready to work. And I think that ought to characterize us spiritually. With faith in God, with prayer to Him, we ought to have the sword of the Spirit in one hand here, and out here talking and teaching people here what is right, the best, and working at the same time the thing that's good. Serving God and doing our work at the same time. I think this is the idea of it all. Right, and everyone with his hands wrought in the work, and with the other held his weapon. And the builders, I read that one, and I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, the work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place soever you hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither, unto us, our God will fight for us. So now, wherever you hear, I've got my trumpeters here now, wherever you hear the trumpet sound, you assemble there hurriedly, for that's where we'll be needed to fight. So they drop their job and grab their weapon and take off. We'll defend ourselves, and God will fight for us. That's another expression of faith. Our God will fight for us. I love Nehemiah. I love his faith, his devotion to God, and the confidence that it can be done through the help of God. I like Jesus' statement, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you say unto this mountain, remove hence beyond the place, and it shall be removed, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. And I believe that's so. Now remember this. When you quote that passage, remember, nothing's impossible to us within the scope of that which God wants us to do. Within the scope of that which God wants us to be, nothing is impossible. That doesn't mean that I can go out here and say to that mountain, remove yonder, or go out here and say that I can move or do this or that which man can't do. But within the scope of what God wants us to do, God says, and to be, nothing is impossible unto you. Do you believe that? I do. I believe with all my heart. I believe that nothing is impossible to me, what God wants me to do. He's taking into consideration my ability, taking into consideration my opportunity. He takes all that into consideration. So sometimes us preachers get carried away on a subject and will overstate our case. I've been guilty of that more than once in my lifetime. As I go older, I try to be more cautious. Don't overstate my case, but always recognize the scope within that which is said will be done or revealed or accomplished. Well, all right. Then this is what we want to try to learn. This is a lesson we can learn from cases like this. Now, verse 21. So we wrought in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, that everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us, and the labor in the day. So neither I, nor my brothers, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard that followed me, that's the ones he brought with him, and none of us put off our clothes, everyone went with his weapon to the water. Now they didn't take off their clothes by night. This matter that went to the water, it says that the text is very uncertain. I read a comment or two on that this week, and nobody knows for sure what it meant. Probably it meant that they slept and then rose up to go to the water to drink or whatever, bathe or whatever it was. They all carried their weapon with them and were ready to fight in any minute. Well, I guess that's what Paul had in mind in Ephesians 6, where he said, fight and put on the whole armor of God. And when you've done all to stand, I've done all to stand. Be always ready. Put on the whole armor of God, the breastplate of all right, girding the loins of truth, breastplate of righteousness. Take the sword of the Spirit, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, and having on being prepared the sandals of the gospel, the shod of the preparation of the gospel, not having done all to stand. And he said to Timothy, fight the good fight of the faith. Lay hold on the life eternal. Paul said, I fought the good fight. I finished the course, kept the faith. It is a fight, a spiritual fight. Put on that armor, faith in God, and then be ready to fight for the faith defended at all times. Well, this is God's plan. Now, so here we didn't put off our clothes. None of us put off our clothes during that time. Now would come a complaint. Now comes trouble in the camp. You know, there's always... And I think this next chapter I think this is typical of the Jews in their whole entire history. I want you to note it. Notice what it is. Then there arose a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. Now the Jews generally are those in the city of Jerusalem. When you read about, they're the ones, especially in the Gospel of John, when John is talking about the Jews, and he doesn't have any use for them. I can tell that. And their faith, I mean, their lives. Those are the ones in Jerusalem. I think that's what you'd have back here. Against their brethren, the Jews. For there were that said, now here some say, we, our sons and our daughters, are many. Let us get grain that we may eat and live. In other words, provide us with food while we're working here on the wall. But we don't have any source of income. Now these are the poor ones who have no source of income. Give us something to eat. And there's a second group. Some also there were that said, we are mortgaging our fields and our vineyards and our houses. Let us get grain because of the dirt. That is, if they had it mortgaged out, the one that held the mortgage, he got the increase that came from the land. So they didn't have anything to eat. That's the second group that mortgaged what they had then. And here's a third group. Now that was also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute upon our fields and our vineyards. All right, yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children are as their children, and lo, we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants, and some of our daughters are brought into bondage already. Neither is it in our power to help it, for other men have our fields and our vineyards. All right, now here are those who had mortgaged their fields to pay the tribute to the king which they owed him. So they didn't have anything to eat. So here's a great cry that comes up. Now, I want you to note the contrast between these people and some of the rest of them. Right now, verse 6, he goes on that verse 6, and I was very angry. Now, here's Nehemiah's response to that very anger and his reproach. When I heard that cry and these words, then I consulted with myself and contended with the nobles and the rulers and said unto them, you exact usury every one of his brother. And I held a great assembly against them. Now this was usury. Now it's not wrong to lend the money to a family. Wrong to take usury or charge. I'll get to that in a moment. And I said unto them, we after our ability have redeemed our brethren the Jews that were sold unto the nations, and would ye even sell your brethren, and should they be sold unto us? Now we've sold ourselves. We've done all of this for you, you brothers who are here in Jerusalem. Now you're going to take advantage of these fellows and rob them and take away what they've got while they're here to protect you and to build a wall for your protection. But the Jews look like all he wanted rather than to give. He wants. Then held they their peace and found never a word. Also I said, the thing that you do is not good. Ought ye not to walk in the fear of our God because of the reproach of the nations and our enemies? I likewise, my brethren and my servant, do. Well, let me come to that in just a moment. Well, I'll go ahead and read it. Likewise, my brethren, my servant, do lend them money and grain. I pray you, let us leave off this usually. Now, I don't think Nehemiah was charging. I'll get to him in a few moments. Now let me look back at what the law says. Turn to Exodus 22, Exodus the 22nd chapter. You don't have it in Leviticus and Deuteronomy also, but I want to read all three passages here. In the 22nd chapter, the law that God laid down in verse 25. If thou lend money to any of my people with thee that is poor, thou shalt not be to him as a creditor, neither shall you lay upon him interest. If thou at all take thy neighbor's garment to pledge, thou shalt restore it unto him before the sun goeth down. For that is his only covering. As a poor man, you see, it is his garment for his skin, wherein shall he sleep. And it shall come to pass, when he crieth unto me, that I will hear, for I am gracious. So now here was a law that God made in the very beginning of the history, that you couldn't lend, you could lend money to your poor Jews friend, neighbor, but you couldn't charge him interest on it. Alright, now turn from that to Leviticus 25, verse 36. Leviticus 25, verse 36, I believe it is. 35. And if thy brother be waxed poor, and hand fail with thee, then thou shalt uphold him as a stranger and a sojourner shall he live. As a stranger and a sojourner shall he live with thee. Take thou no interest of him or increase, but fear thy God, that thy brother may live with thee. Thou shalt not give him any money upon interest, nor give him thy victuals for increase. I am Jehovah your God, who brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, to give you the land of Canaan, and to be your God. I gave it to you, now you use it right. So here the second time, that law is stated. Right? Now then you find also in Deuteronomy, the 24th chapter, a little different repetition of it, but the same thing. I want to get these because you don't want to note the difference between that and now. Chapter 24 here. All right. I guess it wasn't here. Yeah, 16. 24, 16. All that. Well, I don't remember now. I'm in the wrong chapter. Anyway, it's also in Deuteronomy, a similar thing, just a little different than the way I want to get it. But anyhow, here is, I think it's still been wrong. If my neighbor, if my friend, my brother, is in need for me to charge him to live. But if it's a business proposition, it's altogether different. He wants to borrow money, and I've got money to lend. I lend him money so that he can make money on that money. I've got a right to a part of it myself, don't you see, and the chance I take on his failure there. But if it's a matter of his being destitute or in need, and I lend him money, I can better to give it to him. But if I don't give it to him, and he wants to rather borrow it, then don't charge him interest, and when he can, he'll pay it back to you. I believe that's the law that God has here. Now, what these Jews were doing, back in Jerusalem, they came back to Jerusalem now. Now these brothers that are helping them to rebuild their wall, while they're charging them exorbitant prices for interest and all that. Now let me go ahead down and see about what they were doing. All right? And so, they restored it. Then said they, I want to read another one. Restore, I pray you, to them, even this day, their fields, their vineyards, their olive yards, and their houses, also the hundredth part of the money. Now why a hundredth part, I'm not sure. One commentator thinks that means that was the interest. In other words, every month you get, that would be 12%. You say every month you give them a tenth of the amount that he owes you. That would be 12%. Well, of course, that was a pretty high rate that time for a poor man there. And so I return him that interest that he was paying you there. Right, and furthermore, of the money and of the grain and the new wine and the oil and so on. Then said they, and I know their response, which is not honorable. Then said they, we will restore them and will require nothing of them. So will we do even as thou sayest. Then I called the priests and took an oath of them that they would do according to this promise. Also I shook out my lap and said, so God shake out everyone, every man from his house, from his labor, that performeth not this promise, even thus be he shaken out and emptied. All right? Here, and let's read the next verse. And the people said there, even thus he shall be shaken out. And all the assembly said, amen, and praise Jehovah, and praise Jehovah. And the people did according to the promise. Now, as he was sitting, their garments there, the general wore an apron here as something to carry material in. Remember that Jesus talks about his bosom being packed up full of overflow. Well, that means here that here as a man holds up this apron, it's full. So he got up and took his apron and shook it out and said, now if you've taken an oath to him that doesn't fulfill the oath, well, let God shake him out and reject it. And so this was the condition on the oath that they took that particular time. Well, I don't think I have the time to finish this. Let me just review briefly now what we've had. He's come back. He's gone around the walls. He found that the condition of them and told the people about it. And they say, let's build it. And so they get busy then. And he prays and they work. Now the enemies are against them. And that's another thing we'll always have. There'll always be the enemies of God, enemies of truth. And so here's Sanballat, and up here in Syria to the north, and here are the Ammonites over here. Here are the Arabians down here. Here are the Ashdodites here. Right, so they're practically surrounded. Now these people from the different villages here round about, who have sent men into Jerusalem to help build the wall. Now they come to him several times, again and again, and say, come on back home. We need you. But Zerubbabel learned of the plan of these individuals, so he made preparation here for the people to fight, and providing a central place there where they could be protected in that, no doubt within some of those ruins there. And then with that preparation, then as they went to work, half of his servants that he brought with him, probably the soldier that came with him, they stood in constant guard. The other of his servants, they helped rebuild the walls. Then the people here, they would one hand holding the weapon and the other one working. And then others who had to use both hands had their swords on their thigh. So the people now are ready. So the lesson that I get from it and want to leave with you is, while we're praying, let's work. While we're praying and working, let's always make provision for the protection of our spiritual life by the armor that God has provided for us, putting that on. I think this is the lesson that we can learn from this lesson today, this part of the book. These men, Zerubbabel returned with the group in 536, and we built the temple by 516, had the temple built. Ezra came back in 458, and his work was to get them a restored confidence in the law, respect for the law, obedience to the law. And so he met with that condition of these men who put away their wives and all that, and he tried to correct that, did correct. Nehemiah comes back a few years later in 444, I've always thought, one writer said 445, either one doesn't matter. Came back about 444 or 5. His mission was to rebuild the walls. So he had to get the people stirred up and interested and meet the opposition, but they finally got the walls built. And that was 100 and some odd years in the restoration movement there to get the people back in Babylon. Have any questions? Question you want to ask? Well, I'll leave it there and start there with verse 14 next time. And we'll move on as far as we can in this. And a lot of this a little bit later, just names again. But at any rate, we've got two or three very interesting chapters before we get to the conclusion of this book. If that's all, we'll leave the lesson with you there.